Mr. Keeler, Reel 4. We were talking about the Atlantic convoys based largely at Blackton Dock, Liverpool, but occasionally dropping in at Londonderry and Belfast. You mentioned that there were a couple of possible contacts with U-boats. Do you remember what happened in these incidents?
Well, we used to drop death charges in. As dick people would say, there's a, you get a ping, you could hear it pinging through the apparatus. You made contact with a U-boat or whatever it was. Sometimes it was fish. Sometimes you used to drop death charges and fish would come up. So therefore you had fresh fish to start for supper. No? Things like that happened. And one incident we did have where it didn't involve me, apart from being I was on board, there was a U-boat, there had been a captured U-boat, which was broke away from its tug, and we were sent to board the U-boat. We sent a cargo afterway. That's another man's story, also in that book. Another man's story. We tried to board this U-boat, but we didn't do it in the end. It was left, it finished up on the rocks. But having said that, it was eventually got off the rocks and was made into a British submarine, which finished up the war as one of our submarines.
But you didn't see this, or
we saw it. Oh, that's good.
Well, what exactly happened then?
Well, we put a cargo raft in the water.
How had the submarine got on the rocks?
It was being towed from one part of England to another. It had been captured at sea. It was being towed to, I can't remember where or where it got for, but it broke away from the tug. The sea was very, very rough. And we put a cargo raft in the water with two men on board to try and board the U-boat, to try and get a rope on board, but they couldn't get near it. It was heaving up and down the water so much, rolling, they could never get near it. But that's another main story in the book, which you'll see. The men that actually did the thing, you know. One of them was dead, one of them was still alive. They'll tell the story about it.
Anything else about the routine of those convoys? You were doing them from round about January through to...
Well, it was always the same routine. You used to go and pick up a convoy off the States or, you know, off of Newfoundland or whatever, and bring them back to either Liverpool, Belfast or Londonderry, whichever port was that they were going into.
Really. Were you ever... Did you suffer a lot from U-boat attacks? I mean, what, did you lose ships?
No, we didn't. We never lost a ship. The whole time we were U-boat hunting in convoy, we never lost a ship.
So you...
Bearing in mind, you're now into 1944, when the U-boat war became much easier. Well, you still had to be on your toes, and also used to chase after...
And nothing particular, no anecdotes of what life was like, and nothing else about that period before?
Not really.
Now, what about you were then sent in June for D-Day? What do you remember that?
We had to go down to Plymouth from Liverpool and tied up with HMS Nelson, the battleship that was going to sail off the French coast, sail France, prior to D-Day. And we escorted her off the coast of France on before and on D-Day itself. But then we had a signal from the Admiralty that we should again be in a gas boat. Junior officer, we had to go and investigate a contact that had been sighted in the Atlantic, and had to leave Nelson and go off on that.
So did you actually escort her while she was bombarding the beaches area? What do you remember of that?
Well, the guns firing, the big guns firing ashore, you know. Because I said at the same time, as they started showing, we had this signal come to say we had to leave the Nelson and investigate this contact that was made in the Atlantic. So off we had to go. But our captain, bless his heart, sent a signal to the Nelson. The Spirit of Nelson is on this ship. We would like to stay with you. But the Nelson signaled back, carry on, instruction, I think the message was, that we should carry on with what we've been told to do. And so we left Nelson and went off our normal duties of investigating this contact, whatever it was. I can't know what it was now.
And nothing came of it?
Nothing came of it.
Anything else about that time in the English Channel?
Not really. No.
Now, would you get many leaves? What would a typical leave be like?
We used to like leave from Liverpool because we'd get the train to London. But sometimes we did occasionally get leave from Belfast, which meant crossing the Irish Sea, which wasn't very pleasant on a ship. But I probably did that only once. Otherwise, my leaves were from Liverpool.
And what would a typical leave be like?
6 days. 6 days, you know.
And what would you do?
Finally got there to Kent. Eat mum's food. Sleep. Nothing very exciting. I had no pals there, did I? Except Robbie came home with me a couple of times. My pal off the bullet came home with me a couple of times. Or we might have had to run into the town to the pub or whatever. But nothing very exciting.
And then
we were too shattered. We were too shattered, too worn out.
Well, was fatigue a real problem then? Tell me a bit about that.
Not having enough sleep. I lost a stone on one trip from seasickness. I really did. I really became very ill with it, but I still did my duty.
But the tiredness, I mean, how bad was it?
It was very bad. It was very bad, very difficult indeed.
What made you so tired? I mean, just
well, watchkeeping really, fires off, and when you were off watch, you couldn't sleep because the ship was rolling. And the only time you could sleep was really when you were in harbour. But even then, in harbour, you had to do a watch on the gangway or whatever. You still have watchkeeping to do in harbour. It was a very exhausting time. I mean, I know I was a young man, but I did find it very exhausting. And I'm sure everybody else on board did as well.
Now, what's the next thing you recall then? What did you do between June and October when you joined the 19th escort group? What were you?
It was escorting. That's all it was. That was all we used to do, was pick up convoys and escort ships here, there, and everywhere. You know, until this in December, we were doing a sweep. There'd be you guys reported.
Now, hang on a minute. What about when you joined? You said you remembered being with the 19th group very well. What do you remember? How did that change things? Were you still based at Liverpool?
Still based at Liverpool, yes.
What difference is it? Why do you remember joining them particularly?
Because it was more of a routine, I think, really. We were attached to other groups before, but we were so junior. You know, it never became part of a group, so to speak. 19 was the one I remember most of all. That was our last group, and we were with them for a little while, where Hesperus was in charge of it, you know. And we were with Hesperus and the other ships when we were torpedoed. We were doing a sweep off of Cape Roth, 7 miles out at sea.
You know, you'd left Londonderry. That's where you'd set up. That was the 1st of December.
Prior to Christmas, 1944. We even stored ship for Christmas, to be at sea for Christmas. We put the puddings on board, whatever we were going to have for Christmas. We stored ship in Londonderry. We played football the afternoon. We went ashore, went to sea, I remember. Very muddy, very wet, very cold. And I was very stiff from playing football, I remember. And we went off on the U-boat team, hunting this U-boat. And we'd been at sea at night and into the next day when we were torpedoed. When HMS were the torpedoes.
Now, what's the first thing? What were you doing? Where were you?
Now, I was in the bosun's party, as I said, and I was right down in the bowels of the ship, right down in our little locker where we used to keep all our wires and splicing gear. Now, my knife was very blunt, and on the way down to the bosun's locker, I borrowed a stone to sharpen my knife, and I borrowed a stone from the store, which was one deck down. And I went on down to the bosun's locker, and we'd finished working down there, and it was coming up to lunchtime, or stand easy time, not lunchtime, stand easy. And it was coming up for 11 o'clock where we had stand easy. And I left the kibbutz and went up, and on the way up to my mess to get my cocoa or tea or coffee or whatever it was, I handed the stone back to the storeman, and that's when the torpedo struck. That's all I remember about.
What was your first impression with the hit?
Well, there was a terrible bang, obviously. All the lights went out, but also you had emergency lights come on, red lights come on. which was again was partly dark. And this is where the awful part of doing torpedo comes into. It's every man for himself. And there was a lot of us, one deck down, trying to get up that ladder, up the upper deck. Your first reaction is that you've got to get to your abandoned ship station. You knew immediately that you'd been torpedoed, obviously, and you had to get up on deck. And that's every man for himself up that ladder. Not to push anybody the other way, but it's a scramble. And you saw a panicky. You saw panicky to get to your abandoned ship station. Where I went straight to my abandoned ship station, which was on the Kali raft on the starboard side of the bridge.
And what could you see as you came up out onto deck?
Well, I had to cross the deck from there. I had to go from the port side to the starboard side. And there was obviously smoke or steam, probably steam. And also the fact that Bruin was beginning to break in half so quickly. The deck, you know, the centre part of the deck began to go down like that, you know. And I got across to the bridge, and that's where I was when I was told to abandon ship. It was very quick.
There you met Ted Rosen, it said. Who was he?
In my abandoned ship, Ted Rosen was one of the men. I can't remember the names of anybody else but Ted Rosen, particularly because we had an incident together. Ted Rosen and I were at the abandoned ship station. The captain looked over the bridge and called out, abandoned ship, good luck. Get your raft in the water. So we cut the raft, we undid the raft and got the raft in the water. And it was the inside.
How did you actually launch it? I mean,
it was on a rack. You take the rack off and it slides down the rack and into the water. If you've got two lanyards on it, there's two ropes, and you attach that to the guardrail, which stops it floating away, right? And that's what happened. Now, going back to this coxswain, this pig of a man, he immediately appeared on the deck. We were about to abandon ship. We were in the Kali raft, in fact. Some of us were, not all of us, some of us were in the Kali raft, hanging on. And the coxswain looked over the side and said, "Who told you to abandon ship?" Sticks in my mind very much. And of course, one of us said, I said, or Ted said, the captain did, you know, 5 minutes ago. It wasn't 5 minutes, but that was the remark that was made. I remember that well. And with that, the coxswain was standing on the upper deck, absolutely immaculate, with his white top on his peak cap, and he jumped. He went down beside us and came up covered in oil. I can still see it to this day. With his hat covered in oil, you know. No sooner was he, I said this, that he was in the water. You know that's this horrible man. He survived, incidentally. He survived it. Anyway, then the ship was beginning to heel over to port. And my knife, my locking knife, which I'd sharpened, which I had in a sheath, I cut the rope. We cut the ropes. And I cut one rope, one lanyard, and I dropped my knife in the sea, obviously, and that was the end of my life. But then we detached, somebody else cut the other rope, and then we were then on an Akali raft, which, with one lanyard still attached to the ship, as I remember, the ship was heading over to port. The raft was then by being tipped up, and we were. Ted Rosen and I and the other men were all thrown in the water. And it was then Ted Rosen said to me, can you swim? And I said, yes, I can. So we had our life belts on, by the way. You always had a life belt on, which I'd blown up before I'd been in the ship. And with that, we struck out, him and I together, among other men in the water as well, and all of them, Ted Green and whatnot, and we struck out. But unfortunately, we were sucked back under the ship because the ship by then had broken in two and was going down.
Now, let me get this straight. So, you cut the one lanyard, you hadn't been able to cut these lanyards,
no,
and so the Kali raft had gone under.
We were attached to the guardrail.
So, you
were. We were tipped into the water. We were tipped into the water. And it was then said to me, we were swimming in the oil, in the water. Cold, it was freezing cold. We were swimming, and we swam, but we were sucked back, physically, the serious of being sucked back under, back with the ship. And we realised we had to swim, you know, to get away. But we did, we couldn't. We were sucked back under the ship. Now, when I say under the ship, the bow by now had turned onto its side with a point up in the air. The other part of the ship went in two pieces like that. And I was under the bell part with K469, which was our pilot number, above us. And we were sucked back, Phil and I, together under the bell. And we then struck out the other way to get out the other side, away from us, you know. So we got out under the other side of the ship. And that's where we found another raft, fortunately, a rope and cork raft. So that was rope, which are in different positions on board the ship, which I can show you on the ship, that picture. That when the ship sinks, they float off. They don't have to be released, they float off. They're made of rope and cork. And we came across, we swam till we saw one of these, but unfortunately it wasn't fully opened. It had got caught up for some reason. And it wasn't, but it was a quite a long tail of it hanging out. So we got onto that, and that's when I found my, put my arms in and out of the rope, in and out of the cork, and hung on. And at one point there were 10 of us on this raft, and I'm afraid men were beginning to drop off by that time, and men were getting exhausted.
How long did that take? I mean, are we talking...
Well, I maintain, I always had that I was at least 4 hours in the water, but that's disputable, and it could have been less time, could have been less time.
And how long was it before people started to not be able to cope?
Well, it was very cold, it was snowing, covered in oil, as I said, and people started dropping off pretty quickly. And there were other men swimming up, trying to get to the raft. The cook, I remember, who obviously wore white, but he was covered in oil, he tried to get to the raft as well, but he was swimming, and we were trying to encourage him to come on, come on. Hang on, but he didn't make it, he just made it away. It's awful, awful tragic to see these men dying, you know. But I didn't manage to hang on. Then the next thing I remember was, I think I went partly unconscious then, because the next thing I remember was we came alongside Hesperus.
Now, hang on, before that, how cold was it? I mean, you know.
Freezing cold, we were stiff as a board. It was snowing while we were in the water, flakes of snow were coming down. It was December, it was very, very cold. And it was snowing while we were in the water.
And there's a bit about, you started to sing Roll Out the Bow.
You encouraged each other, come on, let's sing, you know, Roll Out the Bow. Some were saying their prayers, I was saying my prayers. You know, you were delirious. And the Roll Out the Bow was one that sticks in our mind very well, because it was a very well-known wartime song at that time. And then when we got to the gangs all here, we were singing the Hesperus is here. That we gathered by the position of Hesperus, that we were going to get picked up by Hesperus, you know, who by then was going around picking up survivors.
Now, what was the next?
The next thing I remember, we came alongside Hesperus, right. I was the stick of the board, I couldn't bend my arms. They're all sailors that taught to tie a bowline. That's one of the main knots you're taught to tie a bowline. If you get a rope thrown at you in the water, you tie a bowline around yourself. It's a knot that doesn't come too tight. You tie a bowline around yourself and you can be pulled out of the water. Now, the Hesperus' crew were shouting down to us, tie a bowline, they were throwing us ropes. And I said, I can't. My arms are stiff. And fortunately, then also there were men down on standing nets hanging over the side, grabbing hold of us, trying to save us, but we were covered in oil, and they couldn't hold on to us. But anyway, one man did, I say very kindly, which I still consider a good point on his part. He threw me down a bowline. He threw me down a rope with a bowline, died in it. Here, you know, and I managed to get my arm, this arm, in the bowline, like that, and hang on to the rope, and the rope round my neck, which I still feel I'm suffering from to this day. And I was then pulled up out of the water, but things pulled up. 1 minute you're up level with the ground, the next minute with the ship rolling, you're back in the water again. But I was hanging on to the deck, you know, and I eventually got level with the deck, and then wee hands pulled me through the bottom guardrail onto the deck where I was laid on the deck. Covered in oil, of course, obviously, and so from there, I was carried down aloft. There was only one bathroom on board a destroyer on the Hesperus, and that's the officer's bath. And I don't know what happened to some of the other men, but that's where I was carried down aloft to the officer's quarters, where there was a man in the bath, you know, covered in oil, being scrubbed with sacking and whatnot. They pulled him out, they cut my clothes off me, they just cut me all down, life out as well, the whole lot was cut off me, and I was dumped in this bath of oily water. It was being refilled all the time with a hot tap, you know, and oily water. And there I was scrubbed and scrubbed by umpteen different people, and eventually pulled out and wrapped up in blankets, and I was carried then down to the mess deck. One forehead down to the mess deck, where is the most amazing sight, because you've got men laying on the deck, still swimming, you know, still thinking they were in the water. You know, it's a terrible sight to see these poor devils. Some dying, obviously, but the Hesperus crew were absolutely marvellous. I thought it was a routine they had before, and how they spoke to them. They'd done this before, because they were a whole wartime escort vessel. There was a senior officer in the escort group, and they open their lockers and give you their clothes. You know, they here, put this on. You know, so we were all being kitted up with kit from the Hesperus men's locker. You know, but I'm very sadly doing all this incident while I'm being bathed or scrubbed. The good oars whaler come alongside with the survivors in, and unfortunately Hesperus had a contact that they were having a torpedo fired at them. There was one of the U-boats tried to fire the torpedo at them, and Hesperus had to go full ahead, which you'll read in some of the reports that some people saw it, the smoke billowing as it shot ahead, and unfortunately it tipped this whaler over. And all the men from the whaler were drowned, unfortunately, except the coxswain of the whaler, and also one of our crew members in the whaler. He was up. So all the rest, the good oars whaler, two men were drowned, who were running the whaler, and also all the other men were drowned as well, who were in the boat. Right, and now we're down in the mess deck being... Did soup poured down us, rum poured down us, they were trying to get us back to life again. You know?
How did you feel? I mean, how were you in your head? I mean, some of them didn't know where they were.
In my head, I came down very quickly. I was very lucky. I came to very quickly. And that's why I remember physically all seeing all the other poor men, you know. And then we just sat there on the mess deck and we were taken then into Thurzo, into a harbour called Thurzo, which I'll show you a photograph of eventually if you want to. And we were taken, which I've taken since, obviously. Taken to Thurzo, where we were then put ashore. And we eventually picked up a train. We were all flown to Australia going to go back to Chatham Barracks. And then we travelled through the night and a couple of days to get back to Chatham Barracks.
And so what was your mental state? I mean,
on the way down, well, honestly, you were in a mental state where what had happened. You were stunned by what had happened. You couldn't get it out of your mind, obviously. I mean, you couldn't think or talk about it for a long time afterwards. You put it out of your trying to put it out of your mind, because it used to bring tears to your eyes, obviously.
Did it make you? I mean, even when you. I mean, some survivors have said that even when they're rescued, that they're still scared in case the Hesperus has sunk.
You were still scared. You still knew you were on a ship, and you know you might be sunk again. You know.
Were you aware the submarine might still be there?
Yes, of course you were. Of course you were. Oh, yes. But then two of the escort vessels went after the U-boats. Two came off to pick us up along with the Hesperus. And we, in the end, all the survivors were put on board Hesperus. And Hesperus, you'll see from my paperwork that Hesperus received a signal to where they had to take us to, and they took us back to shore. There was some surveys where we were taking the scapper flow.
Hang on, just let me pick up a thing. What happened to Ted Rosen?
Ted Rosen was to come back in a survival of me.
So he stayed on the raft?
Yes, stayed on the raft. We had abandoned the raft, didn't we?
Sorry, the corporate.
We came alongside. You have to read Ted's story, finally, to know what happened to him. But we were all basically treated the same. I'm not sure everybody was dumped in a bath. Some men didn't get to the bath, I don't think. But they were literally scrubbed with sacking and anything to get circulation back, you know. But we were still covered in oil. I mean, regardless of being in the bath, you didn't lose your oil. We didn't lose our oil until we got back home, back to Chatham, in fact, you know. When we were eventually got back to Chatham, we were still covered in oil, you know. But we had been kitted up in the scapper flow with new clothes. When I say kitted up, basic uniform, trousers, jacket, hat, and a raincoat, if you remember. And that's where we were put on this train. Now, on the way down, it was incredible on the way down. We had at least four stops on the way down where we were taken off the train and marched to the civic centre, or to somewhere in the town we were. Crew was one I remember very well, and we were given food. We were fed with hot meals, you know. And people in the street were sympathised. Oh, they looked to me. But we're amazing, we were survivors, you know. We've been a lucky one. Anyway, if we got back to Chatham on this train, having eventually, I think it took about 2 days, if I remember, to get back to Chatham, and there we were marched from the train back to the dockyard again, where we started off from, off the train, and we were marched into the barracks. And then you knew you were back in the barracks.